This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Hockey News Podcast presented by BetMGM. I'm Stephen Ellis. Joining me as always is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. We just finished watching U18s, Canada versus Czechia. Czechia winning that game 6-5 in overtime. Mm-hmm. Yuri Kulich for a hat trick. This has been a good... I don't know if I can say it's been a great tournament, but it's been a fun tournament.
It has. And I mean, the parity has been pretty impressive. And the fact that it's only eight teams, kind of interesting. You mm-hmm. know, obviously Russia's not there and they would have been one of the powerhouses, but... we're seeing a lot. You can't even really call them upsets now because the field seems to be pretty even. And, you know, I think Canada, they haven't found chemistry yet. I think, you know, these are players that don't know each other, whereas a lot of the other national teams, especially Team USA, does. So it'll be interesting to see how the tournament ends. But it's been a fun one so far. I agree.
I love this tournament because, again, it's so important for the NHL draft. It's important for a lot of these guys who are trying to make an impression for next year. Connor Bedard's been a star player. We will talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, how has your week been?
Pretty good. It was Greek Easter on the weekend. Oh, yeah. My wife's side of the family is Greek, so I ate all the lamb.
So my mom's side of the family is Greek, and I had no idea that it was even a thing. So that's how much I follow that. I do have a Team Greece ice hockey jersey, though.
There you go.
And to my knowledge, I was one of the very few people in Canada having it. Ever since I got it, the team has shut down. They don't play hockey anymore, so it doesn't matter. But I do have, I've been to show, but I have a Team Canada jersey. Actually, I got it right over here. I'll get it. If you're watching the video version, it's a Team Canada jersey that was worn at the Canada-USA Ice Hockey Classic in Canada, put on by one of our podcasters, Carrie Goulet. And just received it. So it's kind of cool because the design is like an indigenous-based design trying to
that is cool.
pay homage to it. So I think it's pretty cool. So yeah, that's a jersey I wanted to show off for today. Just got it yesterday. But all right, let's talk about what's going on in hockey. Mm-hmm. First off, obviously, very sad news last week of Guy Lafleur's passing. That Montreal Canadiens pregame was unbelievable. 10-minute standing ovation, 10 minutes and 10 seconds to be exact. That is, Montreal knows what they're doing when it comes to these big moments.
Yeah, they certainly do. And this is something that, you know, the organization has been really good about for decades now. Mm-hmm. They know how to treat a moment, and they know how to pay homage to their icons. They know how to do things the right way when it comes to honoring those that wore the jersey and wore it with pride. So it's kind of like there's no surprise there that Montreal rose to the occasion, because that's what we expect from the Habs, and they always deliver.
Yeah, so we talked about with the Carey Price's return a couple weeks ago, like what some of the more, what are the greatest moments in like kind of like a comeback or like honoring the player moment. And you look at guys like Sakko Koivu, Carey Price had a pretty good moment, but it was obviously Mike Bossy with the news that same day. And they did a fantastic job for Mike Bossy, and that wasn't one of their own players. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of cool how they handle it. This organization knows what they're doing when it comes to that. They don't know how to make the playoffs this season, for sure. So they're not in it. But we are going to talk about which lower-seeded playoff team you would not want to play in a series at this point. And obviously, look at the first round. Just a couple of the playoff matches at this exact moment. Florida-Washington, Toronto-Tampa Bay, Carolina-Boston, New York Rangers-Pittsburgh on the east. On the west, it'd be Calgary-Nashville, Edmonton-LA, Colorado-Dallas, Minnesota-St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at these series, which team would you not want to play in a playoff series right now?
Well, you know, the obvious answer, I think, is the Tampa Bay Lightning.
It's just funny that they're a lower seed.
Exactly. You know, they're most likely going to be a lower seed unless they win out and Toronto loses out. But, you know, I mean, obviously, they're the back-to-back champions. They've got great goaltending. They've got great defense. They've got great weapons up front. You know, they have heaviness to their lineup as well. Maybe not as much as they did last year. But they're hot right now. You know, for a while there, the Bolts were struggling. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not really coming together. Maybe there's some fatigue setting in, but lately they've been on quite the run. And I also wonder, too, they just visited the White House, mm-hmm. you know, hung out with President Joe Biden. That sort of thing, I think that can give you a bit of a boost at a time of year where, yeah, you're excited for the playoffs to come up, but it can really kind of crystallize things where it's like, we want to come back here next time. You know, it's like, it's just that extra rallying point. And I will also say, you know, the teams are kind of tied right now, so it's hard to say who's the lower seed, but Minnesota and St. Mm-hmm. Louis, that's going to be a battle. And if St. Louis is the lower seed, then I would definitely say watch out for the Blues because, again, they have all the elements and a lot of that lineup has experience as Stanley Cup champions. So it's going to be a battle either way. And I know Minnesota's banged up right now as well. You hope everybody gets back in time for the playoffs. But, yeah, that's going to be a serious tilt.
That's going to be a really good one. And the Minnesota Wild, it's kind of like you're looking at them. It's like you guys have had just, like, no success other than, like, right at the beginning, like, almost make it to the cup final. Mm-hmm. This would be a good time for them to kind of say, okay, let's do something with this. We've got our goalie situation's pretty solid, probably the best goalie situation they've ever had.
Yeah.
I did like the days of Nick Backstrom and Manny Fernandez and Josh Harding.
Totally.
But for me, though, the series that I'm looking forward to, if we're looking at potential series at this moment, New York Rangers, Pittsburgh Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers are a team that, while very talented, is a flawed group. And the Eastern Conference is a very competitive group. All eight teams have 100 points. That's, like, incredible when you're looking at some of the teams in the East or the West. Dallas Stars right now, 93 points. LA Kings, 96. Nashville Predators, 94. For me, I'm looking at this and say, well, the Pittsburgh Penguins have done so much with a team that has not been healthy pretty much at any point this year. Crosby's out, but the Malkin's out. And then they've just been missing some key pieces. They've looked good since bringing in Ricard Raquel. And Casey DeSmith's done a good job with Tristan Jarry out. And we don't know the exact date of when Jarry's going to come back. And if he doesn't come back, well, Casey DeSmith's been good. So that's a good thing to be in. That's a Pittsburgh team that's come through a lot this year. And it seems like the last couple of years, injuries have really hurt this team, but they just never give up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always easy to say, okay, this team's at the end of their contention window. They've kind of have to do it soon. To me, I look at this and say, I kind of like Pittsburgh as my underdog pick to go in the East. Obviously, I'm still going to go with Tampa Bay winning the cup, and they would have to beat Toronto in the first round to make that happen. And we know, obviously, Toronto's kind of it struggles in the first round. In terms of the West, I really like Nashville's odds against Calgary if that happens. Nashville actually has won both their games, and they play tonight. The day we're recording this, they actually play each other. By the time you see this, we might have an answer. But Nashville won both games. They were both overtime games. One shootout, one overtime. So it's not like they were blown out. But Nashville's played really well against them. And it's a group that we know Saros can be really good. Roman Josi's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously, you look at the team Calgary's had and how good of the year they got 108 points, and Goudreau's looking good. Markstrom's been fantastic. So, like, they're one of the teams to be in the West. But I kind of like Nashville as a team where things are just kind of working out.
Yeah, that is a tough matchup because, I mean, you look at the Calgary Flames and, you know, they're kind of I don't know if you can call them a sleeper pick because they are one of the best teams in the league.
Really, your pick to win the cup.
Exactly. But, you know, everybody's sort of talking Colorado and Florida and Tampa Bay. And I think at this point, people are sort of catching on to the fact that the Flames have all the elements. But I would agree, that's a pretty tough first-round matchup if it ends up being Calgary-Nashville. But again, I mean, you never want to say we'd prefer to play Team X over Team Y because then you got the bulletin board fodder. But, I mean, Calgary does have shooters.
Yes.
So that helps. Led by, of course, Johnny Gaudreau. But yeah, that's a tight one, too. That's interesting.
When you're looking at the potential series at this point, every year it's always to say, oh, these are some great playoff matches. And you expect that with, like, the way it is. But in the Eastern Conference, because I think we knew the teams pretty early on in the season, just the way the standings was working out, like, it's been able to analyze that. And the West is still a bit of a race, and Vegas is still, in theory, could make it. It's just not in their hands at this point,
yeah,
which is a tough thing. And their starting goalie's gone. And so when you're looking at this, it's like this there's not a lot of series that I think could result in, like, a 4-0. There's no real sweeps. Like, if you're looking at it, Carolina has been much better than Boston this year. Actually, it was a 6-0 win, a 7-1 win, and a 3-0 win.
Yeah.
So Boston's only scored one goal against the Carolina Hurricanes this year, but that's the regular season. The playoffs, everything changes.
Exactly. And, you know, I think we talked about this last week. It's like, it's Boston.
Yeah.
Like, they're a playoff franchise. They know how to hunker down and get the most out of the lineup. Now, goaltending, maybe it's not as, you know, concrete as it had been in the past where, you know, you knew you were going to be counting on
Tuukka Rask
and obviously Tim Thomas before that. But having said that, you know, they've got a couple of good keepers and they have a pretty solid lineup in front of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, Carolina, the Hurricanes are obviously not going to take the Bruins lightly. But I would suggest that pundits don't take the Bruins lightly either.
If the Hurricanes start the playoffs without Freddie Anderson, Antti Raanta's a good goalie, but he gets hurt so often. It's like
the Peter Kachetkov show coming in.
And that's what's
coming
fun,
in hot.
That's what's fun about the playoffs is like look at Swayman. Swayman's this young guy, and obviously he's been pretty good this year, and it's not like he's going to just appear out of nowhere to play in this playoffs. But it's like you don't know what you don't know, right? And when it comes to playoff goalies, we sometimes see some unbelievable rookie performances.
It's very true.
We could see that out of Swayman. We could see that out of one of Carolina's options there.
That's right.
Maybe Jack LaFontaine shows up and also he's playing. I doubt that one. But it's like it's kind of a situation where I'm so pumped for these playoffs.
Totally. Well, it's funny too. I was going to say it's like the Jordan Binnington situation, but that situation might happen in St. Louis with Ville Husso. While Jordan Binnington watches from the bench.
Yeah, that'd be pretty funny. So, I'm ready for the playoffs. It feels like we should have already started them already because of like – again, the East has been kind of dead for a while,
right.
And it's just like let's. And Monday night they had one game. The I think it was the Flyers and the Blackhawks, and it's like let's come on, speed this up. Let's
wrap it up.
Let's go right to the playoffs.
Wrap it up, B.
Next topic: your breakout player of the year, and we can't talk about rookies because that's unfair. That's pretty cheap. But who would you say your breakout player of the year is?
Okay, so originally I was going to say Oliver Shillington from Calgary, and he has had a fantastic year. What I like the most about him is, you know, when he was coming up as a prospect, you know, excellent skater, and I think we all thought, oh, he'll be a great offensive defenseman. That never really happened, but he's turned into an excellent shutdown defender using his skating for the Flames. So he's a good one, but if I'm going to be honest, what Robert Thomas has done with the St. Louis Blues this season has been amazing. 77 points in his first 70 games. And how's this for a stat? Robert Thomas never had that many points in junior. And he played on a Memorial Cup champion and two OHL champions. He was a fantastic junior player, but he was more of that all-around guy that could play in every situation. And yes, he'll get you points, but you know his previous high was 75, split between London and Hamilton in his final year. And it's interesting because sometimes you get players where when they're in junior and they're good at everything, that doesn't necessarily always translate to the NHL. Like sometimes it's better to have a particular skill that you're great at, and then you kind of round out and find your form in the NHL. Just kind of one of those weird things. But with Robert Thomas, you know, he's been good for the Blues in a smaller role early in his career because, again, they were winning the Stanley Cup, you know, and I think he was a rookie that year. So he was kind of a bottom six guy. He's worked his way up the lineup. You know, he's been playing with Tarasenko and Buchnevich, two very skilled guys. And he's been making the most of it. He's got 20 goals on the season, first time for that in his NHL career. And again, you know, 77 points. I mean, that's pretty amazing for a guy that was producing like half that beforehand, maybe even less than that. Yeah. I think he had 6 goals last year, and obviously he didn't play as many games. But his ascension in St. Louis has been very fun to watch.
St. Louis Blues. Looking at like Thomas when he was a rookie and he's going for the cup run, it's like this is a guy who's got talent, but I don't think anyone expected him to get these numbers.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
For me, I'm looking at Chandler Stephenson. A guy getting a breakout season of 60 points as a 28-year-old, that doesn't happen often, especially when last year he had 35 points and he had 26 the year before that. So this is a guy that kind of just exploded. And he was in a situation where there were so many injuries, so he had to kind of play higher in the lineup than he used to. But now when you're looking at Vegas needing to shed some salary, this is a guy who is you'd want to keep. He's at $2.7 million for next season, but it's something where you might get a good return for him. And when you've got to build a young base there, a young prospect base, you might be able to get some future assets for a guy who, again, you're not shedding a ton of salary at that point, but you're shedding some. And you're probably going to lose Riley Smith and what's Pacioretty's future there type thing. So they're going to have to make some moves. This is one where you might get a really nice return. It's not going to cost the team much, and that means you're not going to have to like take on the salary. You're not going to have to you're not going to lose the deal just doing a salary dump. You're trading him, and you're getting good value. But at the same time, you don't need to trade him necessarily because of how good he was been. To me, though, it's something where, okay, again, you get 60 points because you're playing an elevator role on a team that has talent. You're not like you're going out there getting 60 points on a crappy team or whatever, or getting a lot of garbage points. Like he's been a big impact player for this group. Will he get 60 points again? I don't think so. But it's been like when Vegas has needed to stay in this run, he's been pretty good.
Yeah. And again, a guy that, you know, had a depth role in Washington and then, you know, moves over to Vegas where they've needed centers recently, and now they have Jack Eichel, and obviously Eichel was hurt when they traded him, so they had to wait on that. But I mean, the Golden Knights, they needed pivots. They had a lot of great wingers, but they didn't have that guy that was really going to seize onto that top six role, and Stevenson was kind of the right guy at the right time.
Yeah. I was trying to think if there'd be any goalies that were kind of like, can we say Thatcher Demko was a breakout? Like, he was good last year, but this was like the year he really kind of showed up.
Yeah. I mean, he had that fantastic playoff run in the bubble where he scared some teams. But I mean, for me, Demko was always supposed to be like the guy.
Yeah. But to me, this feels like the year where he's like, okay, now you're like, you're seriously. Like, it's not like, okay, he had one good playoffs, great. Then he, like, okay, regular season. He's the reason Vancouver was in the hunt.
Totally.
For most of the season.
Yeah,
so.
Totally.
But I'm not going to count that because, again, he's had so much. To me, Chandler Stephenson, kind of out of nowhere. Did not expect him to get a 60-point year. Comeback player of the year, kind of in a similar theme. And this one's always cool because, well, I want to hear your pick first. My pick is a guy that seems to have a comeback every other, couple years. So, but what's your pick?
Okay, well, my pick is Matt Duchene with Nashville.
I knew that'd be your pick.
Yeah, I mean, 40 goals. That's amazing. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, he struggled early on in his Preds career. And, you know, I mean, when he was with Colorado early on, we saw the potential because he's obviously got the great wheels. He had a 30-goal campaign with the Avs, and then they kind of trailed off. And I think that expectations were pretty low because, you know, he bounced around a couple of teams. He was with Ottawa. He was with Columbus briefly. Mm-hmm. And Nashville, you know, we've been talking for a couple of years where it's like amazing defense core, no offense other than Philip Forsberg. Mm-hmm. Matt Duchene has really stepped up to the plate this year. And of course, Forsberg himself has been his usual excellency. Both of them with 40-goal campaigns. And, you know, as we mentioned early on, Roman Josi having an immaculate season on the blue line. And that certainly has helped the offense because he's been contributing so many points. But just great to see Matt Duchene back on his stride. And we know he loves Nashville because he is a country music fan. Yep. He is a musician. So fun for him to like really kind of find himself after, you know, a few years of struggling. And, you know, for a player that came in so highly touted in the league, you know, it went John Tavares, Victor Hedman, Matt Duchene in that draft.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rarefied company, especially because Tavares came in with, you know, the exceptional status. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the new era for that. So yeah, great to see Duchene thriving again.
For me, my pick is Jeff Skinner, and it's a tough one because Buffalo's not going to make the playoffs, but for a guy who's got 62 points, 33 goals, he's got 7 points in his last five games, and he's doing that where, do you know what his career high in points is?
That's a good question. I would say maybe like 75?
63, three times.
Interesting.
He's at 62 right now.
Wow.
So he's
going to get one more point this year.
One more point. Or maybe the way he's playing, he might get his career high, which is kind of cool at the age of 29. Mm. But for someone who last year had 7 goals, 14 points, the year before that, 14 goals and 23 points. Mm. Well, he's at 33 goals and 62 points. Like, he's playing well. He's got 33 goals, which is more than he's got assists, which is 29. So those are good numbers. He's been a huge goal scorer for this team. They also have Tage Thompson, who's playing fantastic.
Yep.
6'7", and he's a goal scorer. That's always fun to see. But Skinner is a guy that we always knew could be good. He's a 40-goal scorer in his career. He's had a season of 37 goals, 33, 31. Like, he could put up a lot of goals, but he has these very on and very off years.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be kind of like the running joke in our office here a couple years ago. It's like, man, like, Jeff Skinner, it's like, he's good this year. Okay, he's bad next year. Good. But, like, he had a couple of bad seasons in a row after his first season in the Sabres, 40 goals, 63 points. And then he didn't even come close. He had 21 goals the next two seasons.
Yeah.
So he fell off a cliff, but now he's kind of like the guy in Buffalo. Eichel's gone. He's been kind of with a guy. Alex Tuck's been very good. Tage Thompson's been very good. So there's definitely some pieces to get excited about there. But for me, it's always fun to watch Jeff Skinner play well because he's a good player. And he's been good internationally. He's been good. He's got a lot of value. He just hasn't been able to put up consistently, and he never is in the playoffs. But right now, I'm loving the way he's been playing.
Yeah, and I think it speaks, too, to how the Sabres have turned around their culture under Granato.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Ralph Kruger was coaching there, it was just a bad scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you saw that with the players and how they performed on the ice. And now it's a bit of since Granato took over, it's a sort of new lease on life. We've seen different guys thrive, Skinner obviously being chief amongst them. But, you know, it's like, you just hope things work out for Buffalo because, you know, the players care, that they have great fans. And you just, you know, they've gone through so much over the years, but now it feels like they're in a good headspace as a team, and you just hope that carries on through the summer into next season.
All right. The next question, which non-playoff team makes the field next season? And that's a tough one because you look at some of these teams, and like two teams I'm thinking in particular, New Jersey and Philadelphia. I think a lot of people expected a bit more than like second last and third last in, in the East. But this is one where the I don't know. That's a tough one. What would your pick be?
Well, I would go out west because I still see a good amount of stratification in the East. I'm looking, I mean, Vegas, they should have made it this year. But, you know, given the firepower they have when everyone's healthy, as long as they can figure out their cap situation over the summer and not lose too many assets, like Vegas should be there. But Vancouver and Winnipeg are the other two that, you know, I mean, Vancouver, I think mathematically they're still technically in it, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're out.
Six points, they're out.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Vancouver, you know, I mean, if Bruce Boudreau had been coaching them all year, maybe they're a playoff team. And that's a team where, you know, you get Elias Pettersson chugging along, you know, to his highest potential that we've seen in the past. Then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of the pieces start to fit in again because, you know, you got Quinn Hughes, who is still on the ascent. As we mentioned earlier, Thatcher Demko, fantastic number one goaltender, who's, you know, just coming into his prime as a netminder. And then you've got guys like Bo Horvat, who can do so many things for you. And JT Miller is still there. So you've got those guys that can do a little bit of everything. So I think Vancouver should be there. And you look at Winnipeg, and I feel like, again, that's a team that has the talent where they should be closer than they are. And again, you know, I think coaching is a big part of it. I think they have to resolve that over the summer, find somebody permanent. But the talent is there. And again, they have a goaltender in Connor Hellebuck who has been the best goalie in the league at times in the past few seasons, you know, Vezina Trophy winner. So the Jets, I think they should be there. And, you know, it's tough in the West. There's a lot of good teams, especially in that Central Division. But they should be better than they are right now.
For me, this feels like an easy one, the New York Islanders. And that's a team where you look at, like, right now they're trailing the Capitals by 20 points. And you look at it, if we're counting the couple overtime losses, they actually had an 11-game losing streak in from November until the beginning of December. That's where you lose a lot of those points. 11 games, that's 22 points, and they got three. And it's like, well, obviously they probably weren't going to go out there and win 11 games, but that's a lot of points they lost because a lot of it being injuries, COVID, but a long road trip to start the season. We talked about that a couple times already in the podcast. For me, like, you look at Ilya Sorokin. He was outstanding this year. You could be as good as you can. Varlamov had some points where he was one of the best goalies in the league on a week-to-week basis. So, I think the Islanders team is obviously a much better team than we kind of expected. That feels like a bit of a cop-out, though. For me, I think I was going to say Winnipeg, but I'm also feeling like Anaheim can maybe take advantage of that division.
Interesting.
And I'm not going to count Vegas because they're still in it. But for me, I'm looking at Anaheim, and I still think their young core is really showing up. And John Gibson's had a few 50-save performances this year. And I think the team, they've kind of got a bit of a clean slate with a couple of the guys they moved out, guys like Raquel, guys like Lindholm, where they can kind of take this and they got a bit of cap space. They can, let's see what they could do with the summer.
Yeah.
You got some young guys that are showing up. And Trevor Zegras, I think, is going to hit another level next year. Jamie Drysdale with a full season under his belt, I think, would be good. So, to me, that would be my pick for the West. I like the Ducks. I also bought a lot of hockey cards of Anaheim Ducks players because I feel like they're going to be...
You're invested.
I'm like, I feel like there's enough there, but it's taken a bit.
I mean, what's interesting with Anaheim is, you know, with Pat Verbeek as the GM now, is what is his long-term plan? How fast does he want to get these kids up into contention? And, you know, I mean, there's no wrong way of doing this in the short term. I mean, we've seen teams, rebuilds take a long time. So does he think that they just need a couple of pieces and, you know, that will augment the Zegras, Drysdale, Troy Terry, you know, Mason McTavish nucleus that is coming together? And obviously Mason McTavish still in junior, but played some games with Anaheim this year. Or is next year another sort of feeling out year where you get the kids as many reps as possible and you build up their confidence. And, you know, the season after that, you bring in more veterans. With Ryan Getzlaff gone, I mean, you have a huge leadership vacuum that needs to be filled. Let's see what they do in the summer. It will be intriguing, that's for sure.
There were points this year where Getzlaff, I feel like, wasn't contributing enough on the ice. He wasn't quick enough, and it's like he's playing and he's not getting healthy scratch because of who he is. But it still had an impact, obviously. But I think the nice thing for the Ducks is while they have a lot of free agents next year, not a lot of big free agents, because obviously, you know, Getzlaff's not coming back.
Right.
You're looking at Zach Aston-Reese as a UFA. You're looking at Gerald Mayhew, Buddy Robinson, Dominic Simon, Andre Schuster. Like, not a lot of huge names to worry about.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of contracts where they could bring in new guys where, or just replace some of the older guys, where it's like it feels like it's a fresh slate and they're going to have, I'm not sure how much cap space for next year, but it's going to be, I believe, Cap Friendly has them at like 39 million cap space.
Wow.
That's a lot to deal with for next season.
Yeah.
That 11 million right now. So I think that's actually a fun team where they've got a nice little slate. Because it's something where like they didn't necessarily even need to move like Ricard Raquel, but it was a good call in the end. But
yeah, for sure. You get more assets. And, you know, the luxury they have is that you can bring in guys for training camp, even on tryouts, on PTOs, and say, let's have a competition. You know, like, you don't want to be a team where everybody just gets a role. You want there to be competition for roles. So you bring in a couple of extra guys who can push the young kids and say to a Mason McTavish, like, look, we can always send you elsewhere. Like, you're not guaranteed a spot on the Ducks. If you earn it, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. We're pulling for you, but you got to earn it. Same with, you know, guys that are there now, Sonny Milano, even Troy Terry, who had a great breakout season this year. You have to say, like, look, you know, you're just not going to be given the role. Keep pushing, because we want this to be a competitive environment.
Yeah, so I like the Ducks. I've said it before, and this is a group that they're going to get some fresh faces in there. They got a good young prospect group, and it's their time will come, in my opinion. So the Vegas Golden Knights, and we've already talked about them. This is a team that has kind of just fallen, and there's a good story by Adam Proto on the website kind of breaking down what can has to happen next. To me, I feel like this is a team that has to address their goaltending situation. And when you look at Robin Leonard, his stats this year were not very good. He's been injured a couple times. Season's over for him. Last year, he was injured for a long portion. He went 13-4-2, but his stats were like nowhere near what Fleury was doing, and there were some rough moments. And it's almost like his numbers as a whole are not as good as they were when he, like, the season he had at the Islanders was fantastic, obviously. A great year, and that guy was a Vezina candidate. But it's kind of been downhill from there. And then you've got, it just, to me, I don't know, this team has to address their goaltending situation. Do you agree?
I agree. The problem is they don't have the cap space to do so.
I know, that's
and
the problem.
That's really the catch is, you know, bringing in Eichel's contract and then already having Mark Stone's contract and some of the other deals they have, we know they're going to have to shed salary. But goaltending obviously is a huge part of the equation. And I think, you know, we have to say, okay, well, how much of this injury was Robin Lehner fighting through this season? Because he knew he was the guy. You know, they didn't have Fleury there as the 1A, 1B. So maybe part of the poor play was the fact that he was injured, and now he's getting the surgery. So hopefully he recovers this summer, comes back 100% or as close to it as he can, because he's going to have most of the load. I don't think you have the money to bring in a veteran goaltender. You know, Logan Thompson's playing for them now. I mean, maybe he's a backup, but if I'm looking at this organization right now and saying, okay, well, we don't have money for an outside goalie, I'm wondering if Isaiah Seville is the answer as backup. Now, he's only 21, just came out of college this year from Nebraska Omaha, but he's been amazing for the Henderson Silver Knights of the AHL. Fantastic stats all around. I think he's 6-1 right now, something close to it. And, you know, I mean, this is a player that, you know, he's got the size, he's got the athleticism. You know, playing for Nebraska Omaha, he had to be one of their best players every night, and typically he was. So, you know, I'm not saying that he's a guy that's going to get you 30 starts or anything right off the hop, but if you needed him next year to play some minutes and, you know, maybe Logan Thompson is the other guy that gets you some games, then at least Lehner has some guys that the team can fall back on. Mm. And this is risky. I'm not claiming this is a silver bullet.
That's a risky one.
It's risky because, Seville's a young goalie, yeah, and he's just starting his pro career. Sometimes those guys can fool NHLers because they don't have a book on them. Make no mistake, Robin Lehner has to play the majority of the games next year. But in order to get him enough rest to be effective and to safeguard against the fact that, you know, he has had injury woes, I think your best chance, other than dealing away some of your huge contracts up front, is going to be internal, unless you can find a backup who is willing to play for like $1 million who has veteran experience. I don't know if there's a guy out there. Maybe there's somebody that just wants to live in Nevada.
There's a certain Minnesota goalie that's going to be potentially available.
Would he play for $1 million in Vegas?
After they gave him away for nothing?
Probably not. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's not an easy path for Vegas, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah. That's something where it's like, Robin Lehner can still have these flashes of brilliance, but it's something where, like, if he gets hurt again or if he's missing time again, it's like, can you rely on your other options?
Yeah, then you're turfed.
And it's like, in a perfect world, Logan Thompson isn't playing 16 games and having to save the season for the team. Like,
exactly.
And Laurent Brossoit is a decent backup goalie who's had pretty poor stats this year. Mm. And it's kind of almost, I almost feel like for him, it's like whenever he's been a backup goalie, it's because the teams he's played for, they just don't have anyone else to choose from.
Yeah.
But it's like there's Dylan Ferguson, there's Yuri Patera. It's like, I say Seville is a kind of an interesting choice, but it's like you're taking a risk where it's like they built this team to be competitive for a long time, and they might miss the playoffs with some major salaries that are going to be very hard to move. And do you move a guy like Pacioretty? Well, he's $7 million, 2 years, 33. He's not playing at the goal scoring rate that he used to be, but he's someone where, and he's had his own injury issues and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's someone where that would clear a lot of the salary cap, doesn't fix your problem, but like then the goalie thing is so tough, but it's like if this team wants to compete, you need Lehner to pull a complete 180 from what we've seen the last essentially two seasons.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm a little concerned for this team. So I it wasn't long ago I said I still believe they could be a cup contender, and I truly, obviously you can't say that now, but it's like I this feels like they've just messed it up.
They're in a tight spot, that's for sure. And I'm sure this was not what they envisioned heading into the season.
When everyone was hurt.
Yeah, and, you know, just, I think they thought maybe if they could get Eichel in there and figure out some, you know, salary cap wizardry that they could pull off kind of a Tampa Bay Kucherov situation, but it was not the exact same situation, and now they're on the outside looking in.
The Kucherov thing only matters if you make the playoffs.
Exactly.
At that point, if you don't, then it doesn't matter. You just lost a player for a long period of time. All right, viewer question time. The first one comes from Stanley Gray. And we talked about the U18s when we started the show. Which U18 players have kind of been the most impressive?
Well, you know, we mentioned off the hop Czechia with a big upset win over Canada. Jiří Kulich is a player that I think this has been a real great springboard tournament for him. Mm-hmm. So far, hat trick today against Canada. And, you know, this is a player that didn't get a lot of ice time with his club team playing against men this year in the Czech League. So that's why these tournaments are so important, because scouts do really like him. He's an all-around player. He's got skill, obviously. Right now, it's like he's looking like he could be in that kind of 30 to 40 range. Like, if he continues to play this well, he might be a first rounder. Worst case scenario, it looks like right now, we're going to see him in the second round for sure. And there's a lot of growth that can be found there, again, because we haven't seen him play a ton of minutes, and it's clear that he can be a difference maker. So he's one. Ike Howard, a.k.a. Isaac Howard from the NTDP / Team USA. Again, a player that scouts have liked all year long. He's on the small side, but I had him described to me as a junkyard dog by one scout, because he just goes in there. You know, he wants the puck. He wants to be a difference maker. He's had some pretty great goals already for Team USA at this tournament. He's a University of Minnesota Duluth commit, so you know he's going to have a great all-around game once he comes out of college. And then the third player I'll mention is Julian Lutz from Germany, or maybe it's Julian Lutz. I have no idea. I mispronounced many names.
Mentioned different pronunciations on the broadcast.
There you go. Maybe, hopefully we'll get a chance to ask him maybe at the draft combine how we should actually pronounce it. But this is a player who missed most of the season with a back injury. Jumped back into the DEL, playing against men with Red Bull Munich, and you know, talking to scouts, they were like, looked like he didn't miss a beat. Mm-hmm. You know, this kid has size, he's got skating, he's got skill. And again, he's been the driver for Germany in this tournament, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what we wanted to see. And much like Kulich, this is a player that we might see him at the end of the first round because he has so much potential. And if we don't see him there, then I'm sure we'll see him in the second round and possibly quite early in the second.
I'll say Connor Bedard's name because obviously he's got 4 goals and 5 points. It's easy to say, but he's also had a lot of kind of off periods where I almost feel like Fantilli's been the better player on that line. And they're both 2023 draft prospects, and those guys have been good. I've been a big fan of Gregory Weber on Switzerland. He's got 3 goals in 3 games, and he still has 1 more game to play after we record this. Right now, actually, it's Sweden beating Finland 1-0 in the game. But he's been very good for Switzerland. It feels like he's been kind of one of the big play drivers for a team that's not – a huge contender, but they could be this surprise team out there, and they had a good game against Latvia. I thought he's been good. I've liked Graydon Seatman. He's had a strong tournament for Canada. Reid Dix also been fantastic for Canada. It's funny, he got player of the game, but allowed 6 goals. In his first game, he allowed 8 goals, but he's been probably Canada's best player because he's having to face a ton of shots. He faced over 50 shots. A lot of it was on the power play. And so, yeah, they lost 6-5, but they were the better team at 5-on-5. I think the score would have been like 4-1, 5-on-5 for Canada. So that was not his fault why that kind of happened and fell apart there. I've also liked Leo Carlson for Sweden. He's been kind of not a super – I think he got both his goals in one game, but he played well kind of throughout. And Aaron Kiviari, the 2024 prospect.
Right,
Finland. He's been fantastic. A defenseman who's over a point per game. That's pretty impressive at this age. So I got a couple stuff on him on the hockeynews.com. So this has been a good fun U18s, and it's super wide open. We expect the Americans are going to be the favorites, but Latvia's been a threat here. Germany's been a threat. Switzerland's like, truly don't know who's going to win. Last year it was like, okay, it's Canada's tournament to lose.
Yeah.
And Connor Bedard's partly playing on the third line at points.
Yeah.
But this year it's kind of open. Next question comes from Peter Richard. Is Noah Cates the real deal? Strong rookie campaign so far, even though it's been kind of short.
Yeah, and you know what? This is a player where even dating back to before he was drafted, like in his draft year, I had scouts telling me, like, watch this kid. You know, like, this kid has all the elements. He has such a great motor, and he can do so much for you. And again, you know, he was a University of Minnesota Duluth product, you know, won some titles with the Bulldogs. And, you know, coming on to the Flyers, I had a chance to see him live the other week when they played in Toronto. And, you know, the Philly is obviously struggling quite a bit, but it's more with their defense right now because they're banged up and they just don't have a lot of structure. But, you know, I thought Cates played really well. Same with Bobby Brink, who just left the University of Denver after they won the NCAA Frozen Four. But Cates is interesting because he has that versatility where he can be a penalty killer, he can be an energy line guy, but, you know, I could see him maybe being a complimentary player on a second line just because he's so active and he does so much out there. But again, worst case scenario, you're looking at a bottom six guy that can provide a lot of intangibles for your team. So I think he's for real for sure. I don't know how many points he's going to score in the NHL, but he's going to be a guy that you're going to want on your team because he shows up every night and he contributes in some way every night.
All righty. Rapid fire time. This is my favorite time and one of your favorite times. There's a big music theme to this one, as there typically is, but I want to start off with what is the best goal song in hockey? And it could be any level.
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, Buffalo, they were using Let Me Clear My Throat for a couple of years, which is a fantastic old hip-hop track. And me and my fellow Gen Xers all love that. I will also say, at the Frozen Four, Minnesota State, they're the Mavericks. They have a bull as their logo. They sang the Olé, Olé, Olé song when they scored. And I thought, if your mascot is a bull and you're singing Olé, that's perfect. So I'll go with that.
For me, I'll give a shout out to the Oakville Blades, DJ Jade. Hell Yeah by Rev Theory. That song. Have you ever watched Blue Mountain State?
No.
It's a great
show.
Only
heard of it.
It's a great show. It's hilarious if you like sports-related shows. Right. But it's a very good pump-up song. If you've heard the song, you know what I'm talking about. It's very... I don't know. It's fun. They changed it to the Leaf Skull song for a bit, and the team started losing. So they switched back to Rev Theory and won the championship. So there you go. Elon Musk bought Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of people are saying, time to delete Twitter.
Mm.
If you could create your own social media, what would the selling point be?
Wow. What was the
selling point? I told you you'd have to think about this one.
Yeah, good call. My own social media. You know what's funny is like I have an idea, but it's like I don't want to like tip it off to the world because it would be amazing. So I would say like, yeah, some kind of like hockey theme where the selling point would be, you know, like just like really good, you know, like a really good scouting site would be interesting. That'd be a good social media one where people could like a crowdsourced scouting. I would never pay attention to it myself.
Yeah.
But the users, I think that would be great because you could argue with people all day long about, you know, whether or not you like, you know, Ty Nelson or whether or not you like Frank Nazar or whoever it happens to be. You could have some fantastic arguments based on scouting reports.
Well, see, let me introduce you to the Scout House. It's something that I made in high school, which
nice.
was basically that idea. But the players would create their profiles, and it'd be something where social media based off of showing very video clips and stuff. And there have been things that have come kind of close to it. But the idea was to make a social media for junior hockey players, but then also scouts to kind of work with those guys. And it worked. We did a little bit of it, a little testing, and then we eventually just kind of gave up on it. So if you guys want to steal my idea, pay me for it. But unfortunately, that was kind of my idea.
There, yeah.
kind of the same thing. I was going to say something like almost cheap. It's like, to me, I feel like the least important, well, I shouldn't say least important because it's actually really big for engagement. I dislike Instagram because it's like all of this sharing photos. Like you could literally do that in any other platform.
Right.
But it's kind of like maybe a, like, I don't know, like, I'd have to go with my scouting one. I want to do something kind of almost like more of a video thing where the whole thing is everyone is live streaming, but it's like not like Twitch. It's just like in real life, live streams of each other.
Yeah.
I don't know how popular that would be because there is in real life streaming segment or thing on Twitch, which results in a lot of people getting like bomb threats and stuff.
Yeah.
It would almost be like a more of a live stream, but everything is with your phone and it's all like just in real life and not video games, not anything like that. What is the worst goal song in hockey?
The worst goal song? Oh, that's tough. I mean, the obvious is to say, like, you know, Toronto uses Hall & Oates.
That's my pick.
And that's kind of like, it's kind of funny, though, because I would imagine if you were playing against Toronto and you got scored on and you had to hear Hall & Oates, like, it's almost like a troll by the Leafs.
Yeah.
So I kind of appreciate that where it's like, haha. I'm actually going to say, like, Canada's World Junior team has had some bad ones lately. You know, like the Dirty Dancing wedding song techno remix.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that. I know the fans like it and they get into it, but it's like, the kids on the team, like, they have no connection to that music whatsoever. That feels like it's more for the fans than the players. And it should be for the players because they're the ones that scored.
I was going to say the Leafs song, but for me, it'd be at the World Cup 2016, We Dumb Boys was what Team Canada used.
Right.
But that felt weird because it's like, shouldn't that be what the under 23 team uses? Like being young, like I don't know, just like the whole thing of them being younger. And it's like, I don't know, the name just kind of made sense to me. We Dumb Boys or the Young Boys in this tournament. But
yeah.
There's
at least that was hip hop, like that made sense for the generation.
I will say, like obviously Chicago's one I'm not a huge fan of, but I feel like that's another one where they're just kind of like trolling.
Right when they were good, it was like I remember talking to NHL players like, oh yeah, every time you hear that song, you're like, oh god.
Yeah, but I think that's almost the point. It's like
Just
kind of, at this point, it's like it's almost like if you're picking a song, you want to make it the most annoying song possible,
right?
Because for you guys, if you're winning, like, ooh, okay, whatever. But then the team you're facing is just gonna get pissed off.
Yeah,
which also might not be the best thing, getting the pissed off right after allowing a goal, but. Is that?
Oh, and actually, going back to the best goal song, shout out to Team Sweden. They have their World Junior goal song that people love. Yeah,
Yes, I agree. Slovakia's got a good one too. I don't remember the name, but like when Sweden literally made their own song, like that's cool.
Yeah,
the Trico and I. What video game needs to be made into a movie?
Ooh, that's a great question. You know what? I'm going to go back in the day. Do you remember Twisted Metal?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think they should have made a Twisted Metal movie. And there's been movies that are like kind of similar where it's like cars that like, you know, can smash into each other and stuff. Like the original Death Race 2000 with David Carradine and Sylvester Stallone in what is one of his actually good acting roles, I will say, back in the day. But Twisted Metal, I just felt you could have so much fun with that because the vehicles themselves were so crazy. And then, you know, some of the actual characters where it's like you had like the psycho clown guy. Like,
yeah,
that, I mean, you're at the point now where if like Michael Bay and Jerry Bruckheimer signed on, I'd be like, I'm there. Yeah. I would watch that. You get somebody, you know, like wild to play the crazy clown, maybe one of the Wayans brothers, yeah, for example. I'm all over that.
For me, I will, this will show my age, which is not that old, but I'm going to go with Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty.
Okay.
The story mode was unbelievable. And if you've played the story, you know, there's some really, like, there were some parts of the game that had to be removed for being like too dark. Like there was one where you are in an airport and your whole goal is to kill everybody.
Yeesh.
It's like that part is a very famous part. But to me, it's like the final scene, and I guess it's a really old game at this point, so it's no spoilers, but the scene where you're like looking for your weapon as you're like bleeding out and you end up shooting the bad guy. I feel like that one was pretty cool.
Mm.
One that I really wish would have been done. Did you see the Need for Speed movie?
No.
Okay. It sucks. It's really dumb. It's not good, but Need for Speed Most Wanted is one of my favorite games, and I don't know how you could adapt it into it, but the story mode of that game was as good as you can get for a street racing game, where you start at the bottom, like you are a top street racer, you have your car taken because you lose, and then you start at the very bottom and you're driving like a Golf and you're trying to race all the way to the top and beat the guy that took your car. And there's also another storyline where the police are trying to get after you and there's one police guy specifically that wants to take you out. And I really wish Need for Speed Most Wanted, the original one from 05, would be made. Also a fantastic soundtrack. Had a good mix of hip-hop, but also had like Mastodon, Bulletproof Valentine,
nice.
Ben Sevenfold. It was a really good soundtrack.
All right.
To finish it off, we're going back to real or fake metal band names.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Chaotic Flesh.
I'm going to say fake because that's too generic.
Yes.
That is. All right.
There's a song called Chaotic Flesh. I can't remember who, but that one.
Fair.
Mechanical Poet.
Ooh, man, that's a bad name. For some reason, I feel like it's real, so I'm going to say real.
Real is correct.
Nice. Are they like prog metal or something?
They're not good. Yeah. Let's just say that. They're not good.
Right.
Dead Brain Cells.
I'm not sure about this one. I'm going to say fake because it's like it's close to Dead Embryonic Cells by Sepultura, but it's not. But it could also be kind of like a crusty band. But I'm going to say fake.
So I wrote it down as a name I would love to make. But it actually is a real band.
Okay.
They're a thrash metal band from Canada.
Interesting.
From the 80s.
From the 80s. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
they were probably like DBC. If they were a thrash metal band in the 80s?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah. I thought that was a good band name. Dogs Can Grow Beards All Over.
Oh, this sounds like one of your dumb MySpace bands. I'm going to say it's real just because it's so silly.
So the name is real, but it's a song
by the band
Devil Wears Prada, which became popular during the MySpace days.
There you go. All right. I feel I should get partial credit for that then.
No. They had a song called Assistant to the Regional Manager.
Oh, that's a good name for a song.
Hey John, What's Your Name Again? They were like, and those albums were fantastic. Then they got serious. It's like, then you guys are just another metal band. But it's like when they were fun like that,
yeah,
they were as good as you could be for like a MySpace era metalcore band.
So, fair.
An Aggressive Snail Attack.
Ooh. I'm going to say fake, but these are tough.
You didn't do very well today.
No.
That's a real band.
It's not my fault that I have an elevated sense of what a good band name should be.
Yes. See, I love the band names that are stupid. Again, I will always mention I Set My Friends on Fire. One of my favorite band names.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'd say my favorite band name of all time is Killswitch Engage.
That's a good name.
The band's pretty solid, but
yeah,
it's just the name just sounds so like badass.
Good Guitar Hero band.
Very. Yeah, yes. The guitar stuff's very good in that band.
Yeah.
But when I was looking up some like worst band names, and I saw this, like Led Zeppelin. But then I also looked up best band names, and someone said Led Zeppelin. Like,
one of the worst band names of a good band was, there was a hardcore band from, I think they're from Miami, and they were called Bird of Ill Omen. And it's just a bad name that doesn't really roll off the tongue, but they were incredible, especially their demo.
So I was looking back at some of the music that I made in elementary school. Mm. Yeah, it's a joke. One of them being Stinky Socks, and it was an electronic country band.
Wow.
With double bass drums.
You'd be huge now.
Yeah, oh, we'd be awesome. We'd be great. We had two hit songs by hit. I think they both have 100-something hits on YouTube. Farmer Stinky and Farmer Stinky 2.
There you
and
go.
And those are the ones with like there's a blast beat in one of the songs. The other one I did was Mashed Potatoes, which was just parodies of Pig Destroyer songs.
Nice.
So we had instead of Piss Angel, it was Pig Nose. We even did the 5 minutes of random robotic vocals talking and
right.
my friend talking about like our elementary school Pearl Playground and mini sticks. And I think he talked about how Saku Koivu was good in the shootout and stuff. I don't even know if that was a true fact, but
there you go.
It's kind of all over the place, but that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you. And it's presented by BetMGM. Thank you very much for watching, listening, however you consumed it. And we'll be back next week.